Hello and welcome back to the Blockchain.com podcast. My name is Garrick Heilman. I'm the head of research at Blockchain.com and a visiting fellow at the London School of Economics. Today is April the 15th, the traditional tax deadline in the United States. Now, if you forgot, don't worry. The pandemic prompted the tax filing deadline to be pushed back to May 17th, so you still have time. The subject of crypto taxation is gaining more attention, and not just because crypto assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum continue to make new all-time highs. Policymakers and tax authorities around the world have been debating and issuing guidance around the taxation of still relatively new types of crypto activities, including staking, airdrops, forks, yield farming, and so on. With the rise of stablecoins and growing crypto support on payment platforms like Visa and PayPal, we are also seeing the possibility of crypto becoming more commonly used not just as an investment asset, but as a currency. Indeed, professional athletes and others have been increasingly requesting salaries paid in Bitcoin. In this first installment of our podcast series on crypto taxation, I recently spoke with Robert W. Wood, a tax attorney based in San Francisco. Some of you may have come across Robert's crypto tax articles published on Cointelegraph, which we'll link to in the show notes. Robert and I discussed a range of crypto tax topics, including the history of crypto taxation and how it has evolved in the United States and internationally, how crypto is currently treated for tax purposes, and he was granted one wish by the Internal Revenue Service, what Robert would most like to see happen with crypto taxation. We'd love to hear what you think of this episode and what crypto tax questions you have in the comments section of this podcast. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please rate us and leave us a review as it really helps boost our visibility to more listeners. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. So Rob, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on. And first, if you wouldn't mind just starting off, tell us a little bit about yourself, your work, and how you first learned about cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin.
Sure. I am a tax lawyer, Rob Wood, Robert W. Wood, I guess. My tax law firm is called Wood LLP. We're physically based in San Francisco, although these days, I guess for us and most people, physical presence doesn't seem to mean what it used to mean. We have clients all over the country and indeed all over the world. In terms of 100% of our practice is tax law. So that's tax planning and tax compliance and tax controversies. On the compliance side, we don't prepare any tax returns. We're tax lawyers, not accountants. We hire a lot of accountants and work with a lot of accountants and look at a lot of tax returns, but we don't prepare them. Crypto, I guess like so many things, I learned the hard way from having to learn. I'm not technically savvy, but my tax knowledge is, I guess, necessary. And that was from clients, clients who were asking questions about what to do with cryptocurrency, having gains, how to report them, those kinds of things. So it all sort of started from there.
Great. And so, you mentioned you don't get involved with tax returns. You're more involved, if I understand correctly, on the strategic side of things, or if someone has a problem, they would come to you. Is that fair characterization?
Yes and no. I mean, when I don't get involved in returns, meaning I don't prepare them physically, accountants do that. However, I see a lot of returns before they're filed. I render a lot of formal tax opinions, including on crypto issues. And then those tax opinions in turn typically get summarized to an accountant. If it's a position that we think a particular crypto transaction is not taxable, or we think it's a loan and not a sale, or it's a hedge or a derivative involving crypto, then somehow that has to get translated onto a tax return, or at least sometimes it does. I mean, some of that's planning, some of it's trying to figure out how to make the best sort of reporting circumstance. after year end, if we get hired in January to figure out something that was done in last year. And then controversies, as you say.
Great. Thanks for that introduction. So, I first became aware of your work through your writing on Cointelegraph. It looks like you've been writing and publishing articles there since 2018. So you've been following this topic for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. But I still think the subject of taxation is something a lot of people are not as familiar with. And so maybe you could kind of give us a little bit of an overview of the history of this topic in the U.S. context. I think you have commented on maybe some overseas tax issues as well. But I'm expecting this discussion primarily to focus on the United States. And if you could kind of walk us through that history around taxation of cryptocurrencies and where it started, that would be, I think, a great place to kind of kick off the discussion on the topic.
Sure. Well, it's still developing, certainly. In fact, probably most people, including me, would say that there really is not anywhere near the guidance from the government about taxing a cryptocurrency that there needs to be. Before the IRS made its fateful announcement in 2014 that it considered crypto property and not currency. There were already some questions, certainly. I say fateful because that is still it's not the only IRS guidance, but it's kind of the be all and end all. It was the thing that sort of cast 1,000 ships, so to speak. So everybody is stuck with that. It doesn't mean that the IRS is necessarily right. And there have been lots of debates about that, but that's kind of moot because you have to report, if you're a U.S. taxpayer, you have to, report your transactions and account for them somehow. And a lot of things have happened since then. I mean, there's been some more IRS guidance, but more importantly, I think, the IRS has made no bones about it, that they're pursuing crypto with respect in audits and civil audits. I have several very large crypto audits right now that involve taxpayers who tried to do everything, the right, and they reported lots of crypto transactions, but they're complicated. And the government, the IRS and the California taxing authorities, and I'm sure many other states, they're trying to understand it and also seeing if they can, make some money out of it. But on the criminal side, the IRS is also pursuing people, sort of famously, pursuing people that they think are, not reporting at all or, not reporting as they should. So still a little bit of the Wild West out there, I think, right now.
Right. And in fact, there was some recent news in the past few months. I can't remember when this was announced, but there was a clarification around the disclosure requirement on the 1040 form. Can you speak to that issue and what was originally described or requested, and then what was modified or what additional guidance came out here, I think, in just the last couple months, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, no, Garrick, I think you're right. And what you're alluding to is the the question on the tax return, and I don't have it in front of me, but it's something like, have you ever invested in or sold or traded or something crypto? It's it's meant to be kind of a yes or no question. Did you do anything with crypto? I guess I'm butchering the language, but that's the intent of it. And that is certainly an indication that the IRS cares about this. The IRS is trying to help themselves, but they're also trying to notify taxpayers, pay attention. I have said, I don't think I'm the only one who've said this, that it's really kind of like the old foreign bank account question, which became, famous with thousands and thousands and thousands of people having to sort of fess up about offshore bank accounts. These questions, yes and no questions, even though they're simple, can be pivotal. And you're just supposed to say yes or no. You would report dispositions if you sold or bought things with crypto that triggered tax, you have to report that, but it's a yes or no question. What you're alluding to is just a lot of people said, I think appropriately, hey, wait a minute, if I just bought 100 Bitcoin, I mean, number one, that's not a taxable event. I mean, I just bought it. I haven't made any money. You know, it's an investment. Do I answer this question yes or no, or do I not have to answer or what? So the IRS recently kind of informally clarified, if all you did was buy it, you know, you don't have to check the box. But it's one more thing that the real people that need to pay attention are those who aren't paying attention at all, because, you know, they're not reporting. And those are the people that I think really need to sit up.
Right. Thanks for that explanation. And I think a number of people were a little surprised at the way the question was originally worded and what the intention there was, because it seemed to be treating crypto assets differently than other assets that people were not required to, in their tax return, acknowledge that they had purchased or owned without any kind of gain or taxable event. And so that seemed a little unusual. And it was, you know, I think it led to questions about how to interpret that, but it seems like the IRS, I don't know if there was pressure or they recognized that this was kind of, treating crypto assets differently than they treat other things. And they went ahead and made an adjustment to make it more in line with other things a person might purchase that hasn't triggered a taxable event.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And one of the other major kind of early milestones in the US was the Coinbase customer data request from the IRS, which also received quite a bit of attention. This was from a few years ago. There was, as I recall, a rather unusual, somewhat obscure legal or law that was referenced as part of that request. There was some negotiation, as I understand it. The request was scaled down to rather than, I think every Coinbase customer, I think was the original request, correct me if I'm wrong, but a smaller subset of customers, larger customers, I guess, were reported to the IRS. And I think a number of those customers received letters or something of that nature. And there's been a number of letters that I think that have been sent out since then to various crypto asset participants. Is there anything you want to comment on around that particular case and what's happened since then?
Sure. I mean, I remember it, of course. And I mean, the Coinbase, the IRS, presumably was trying to get things consensually, you know, just by asking in several informal things that they can use to ask to Coinbase for, customer account details and this kind of thing. And then the IRS served a John Doe summons, and a John Doe summons is something that the IRS uses. The IRS famously used it to get UBS account records, Swiss bank account records, and names of Americans. That was back in 2008 or 7, as I recall. So, I mean, it's kind of a big deal. So that was the formal thing that happened. And then, so there was some litigation with Coinbase pushing back, the IRS pushing, the IRS and Justice Department pushing. And then eventually, as you say, they came to a resolution. There was a settlement. Coinbase, had a lot of sort of public relations to do, I think, with its account holders. And so the IRS, got some information. There was a scurrying. Certainly I saw some of people who were in the crosshairs or thought they were in the crosshairs of the IRS and therefore started reporting amended tax returns, those kinds of things. I mean, as you've also noted, I mean, there were also at various times IRS, there was the 10,000 letters. I think that was the number. The IRS was doing, some kind of warning letters. There were several variations of these, but warning letters saying, crypto is taxable, and when you make a transfer, it's property. And if you're not reporting, you need to. Some of those letters, people didn't do anything. some of those letters people took very seriously. Some people who didn't even get a letter, figured that they should start, being more careful. I mean, on the good side, there have also been lots more commercial entrants into the, from established tax preparation companies and from startups. I mean, there have been a lot of, I'm not even sure I could list them all for you. There are a lot of sort of avenues now for people to track and report that, that didn't exist way back in 2014, for example.
Right. We had some recent news actually of a startup tax bid, I believe, that actually raised a $100 million investment round. So I think that speaks to how things have progressed from the earlier days in terms of there being more software solutions and certainly a lot more interest in trying to help tackle this tax issue around crypto.
I'm sorry to talk over you. I mean, I agree. I mean, when you talk about the numbers you just mentioned, I mean, it's astounding, really. And of course, it's not just, secretive people who are, using, crypto on the dark web or something. I mean, this, look at all the hedge funds and investment funds and banks and everybody else who's in the crypto business these days. It's enormous.
Indeed. So I don't know how much you followed the international tax scene. I remember early on, there was some rulings in Europe around is crypto going to be subject to VAT taxes?
Yep.
And in jurisdictions like the UK, it was deemed to not be subject to VAT. And that was celebrated as a win, I believe, for crypto assets and making them more accessible, less complicated, and easier to use. But I wanted to ask you about what you can say about the US approach to taxation versus other jurisdictions. I'm not, intimately familiar with what's happening in various jurisdictions, but I hear things like in Portugal, for example, that crypto may not be subject to any taxes. I think Germany might also have a lighter tax regime. But what can you say about kind of how the US compares and treats crypto assets relative to the rest of the world?
Yeah, I all I can say is that, I'm not a student of how the entire world treats things. I mean, I'm aware, as you are, about some countries that will have announced over time, they're doing something or they're not taxing crypto at all. There are some havens like that, but I'm a U.S. tax lawyer, and I have my hands full with sort of U.S. tax issues. So that's really, and occasionally, I will say, even before crypto existed, I've seen American taxpayers, that is U.S. citizens or long-term green card holders, who decide, in some cases, in large part because of taxes, to expatriate. So, I mean, there's a way to do that. I mean, I've seen it, and I think I have heard, I don't remember specifically if I've seen somebody who's a major crypto investor expatriate, but I've certainly heard it discussed. But I think anybody who stays with the U.S. system, sort of doesn't have a choice. You just comply.
Right. It's probably a good time to mention that, by the way, anyone listening here should not be relying on certainly anything I'm saying for tax guidance. But I was going to mention also, I think Puerto Rico is, speaking of places that Americans sometimes head to, I've heard that that's a popular destination for tax reasons. I don't know if you've followed the Puerto Rican case at all, but I believe it's another place where you don't have to pay capital gains on crypto, if I'm not mistaken, or any capital gains for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of comments. One, I appreciate your disclaimer. I should certainly say, with respect to any comments that I'm making, no one should treat this as tax advice. I'm not your tax lawyer. And anybody who wants to is welcome to email me or call me. I'm happy to talk to you. I'm not giving really any specific comments today anyway, but yeah, just be careful. As to Puerto Rico, I have a number of clients who have moved or who are in the process of moving. It is true that if you comply with the sort of Puerto Rican tax incentives and become a bona fide resident, there are obviously some legal tests to go through. It is true that you can qualify for zero capital gain for Puerto Rican source income. That would not be for U.S. source income. That's a whole nother kettle of fish to go through. As to crypto, there are people who believe that if you, and I've seen opinions on this, who believe that if you go to Puerto Rico with 100 Bitcoin in your pocket, so to speak, that even if it's highly appreciated crypto, that once you satisfy the bona fide residence test, that you can sell your Bitcoin and not pay either US or Puerto Rico capital gain tax. I'm not one of the people that believes that, because the way I read the rules, it's only post move appreciation, which would be treating crypto the same way we treat stock, for example. But I mean, it's a debate. I can't say that I know. And I think you will get differences of opinion on this. And maybe I'm wrong, but I do think on a lot of these things, it's worth drilling down if there's any significant money involved, so that you're not surprised.
Great. I know we don't have too much more of your time, so I wanted to come back to something you mentioned earlier around complicated tax situations. And it sounded like you were referring to people who are actively trading and conducting quite a few transactions. But I was also wondering if you've run across some of these cases around forks of chains. And so famously in 2017, the Bitcoin chain forked and Bitcoin Cash was created, following a argument about how to evolve the protocol. There's been airdrops. In fact, blockchain.com has conducted a number of airdrops. These are, in essence, kind of giveaways of crypto assets. Have you come across those examples? And I believe there has been some tax guidance, some follow-on tax guidance on some of these areas. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, I'm just in a general way to say that, yes, there has been. And I think, and look, the IRS may, be wrong on some of the things that they have said. And that doesn't, that doesn't mean that taxpayers can't disagree. And there are sort of established ways of doing that. The airdrops and the forks, It's one of those things where you could, I think, fairly say, in general, it kind of depends. And so you can have taxable transactions, you can have non-taxable transactions, or at least hopefully non-taxable. But one development I think you haven't asked about, but I'm sure all of your listeners know, is the sort of the non-fiat transactions, the crypto to crypto transactions. I think it's worth stressing that, because, there was a long view, and I'm not saying it's wrong. There was a long view that as long as you didn't cash out, if you traded your Bitcoin for Ether, using the term trade loosely, because it may have been a purchase and a sale, there wasn't anything to tax. And the debate about that is mostly over, because in 2018, the Congress changed the tax code to say Section 1031, which is the like-kind exchange provision, can only apply to real estate. You can no longer use it for airplanes, artwork, or crypto, or anything else. So it's only real estate. So that issue has not gone away, I guess, for tax returns before 2018, but for 2018 and 19 and now, for any year starting in 2018, any transaction that's an exchange like that is taxable. So I presume everybody knows that, but it's really, it's worth underscoring for anyone who does not.
Appreciate that. And again, I think a lot of people are still relatively new to this topic. So best to presume nothing about what at least everyone knows. One other topic I'd love to just touch on here before we have to wrap up is, right now, I think many people recognize that crypto assets like Bitcoin are primarily used as something that's described as digital gold, as more of an investment. But we do see cases of people, buying the proverbial cup of coffee or even some high profile athletes seeking to have their salaries or income paid in a crypto asset like Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I guess I wanted to come at this from two angles. I think there's been some lobbying to try to create some kind of threshold where transactions below a certain threshold, say like buying a cup of coffee, I think I may have heard the number $250. I don't know if this even got anywhere in Congress, that might be one way to kind of make space for some of these currency use cases or really de minimis kind of even non-monetary use cases, like using the Bitcoin blockchain as something more like a database and just appending, some information to it. I wondered if you could talk about kind of the way something like Bitcoin is used, both from a threshold perspective and in a use perspective, or how it's received and how that, what that may mean for tax purposes, and what should it maybe mean if the laws aren't yet clear on the books?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's a good question. And in my view, there ought to be some kind of threshold. I think there were several. I'm familiar with what you're referencing. I think there may have been more than one bill in Congress about this. I was thinking it was $600 or something, but whatever the dollar amount is, some kind of exemption that would say, we're not going to try to determine if you, bought a cup of coffee or, bought a blender or something. It's not something that you need to track. But that hasn't happened. I think if anyone does buy a cup of coffee or a blender, I'm guessing that they don't, go to a lot of effort to figure, something. It would be a fraction of a Bitcoin, I guess, my examples. But I used something, and that was a transaction. I'm going to report it. There ought to be, and I predict someday there will be some kind of exemption like that. But sometimes it's as you said, an athlete or person who's, maybe trying to make a point. Pay me in Bitcoin, not in dollars. Some of it's kind of showmanship, I think. Same thing with house purchases and sales that are done that way, because the IRS would view it as everything's based on the dollar value as of the time of the transfer. The effective time is, it's all money. And so I think as long as you understand that, if there's some arbitrage you can achieve or some other goal you can achieve by having it stated in crypto, that's fine. But it's still money, and a purchase of, back to my silly blender example, that's still a transfer of value, and it's exactly like you sold the Bitcoin for cash and then used the cash. It's the same thing in the eyes of the IRS.
Great. Well, just one last question, is I know we're about to run out of time. You mentioned that you think there could be some more clarity provided by Congress, by the IRS. What, like one or, what's your top thing that you wish that would be clarified, or feel free to name a couple that you run into or you think you might be running into soon that you really would hope to see more clarity around?
Oh boy, I guess I'll answer a somewhat different question, if you don't mind. Yeah, I mean that's a good question.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure what the answer would be, because there are so many. However, one thing that I do think, and I've long thought that the IRS should do, and it would make money and it would make for a sort of better tax system and make more crypto people, I suspect, feel more comfortable, would be some kind of voluntary disclosure program. I don't hear any news that that's coming, but so what voluntary disclosure typically means is kind of going to the IRS with your hat in your hand and saying, and I don't mean physically, I mean, this is done, in correspondence. I didn't report my crypto. I'm now amending my tax returns and I'm willing to pay a penalty and taxes I owe, but, please leave me alone. I'll report starting, appropriately starting, next year, starting tomorrow. The IRS famously did that. I mentioned UBS earlier, the Swiss bank, famously did that in 2008 and went on for 10 or 11 years. I mean, it was over 50,000 people, taxpayers, came forward. There were several IRS programs. There's one of them or two, depending on how you view it, that's still out there, still possible. I still see clients doing it. A voluntary disclosure for offshore bank accounts. Is it called the Streamlined Program? It's sort of got two branches, the domestic and the foreign, for Americans who live abroad. But I think it would be really good. I know there are crypto investors out there who know they didn't do it properly, and in some cases, there are recent years where the statute of limitations is still open, and they probably won't amend. I think in some cases because they're fearful that the IRS may come down on like a ton of bricks. But if there were a system that said, "Look, here's the deal in advance. If you do this, you'll have to pay your tax, and you'll have to pay X, some kind of penalty." But if it were a modest thing, I think it would make a lot of crypto investors feel better, and I think it would help the IRS. And if I had to wish for one thing from the IRS in crypto right now, it would be that.
Great. Well, that's a great note to finish up on. Robert, where else? I know I mentioned earlier that people can read your articles on Cointelegraph. Where else can people go to learn more about you, to get in touch?
Oh, sure. Thank you. I write for Cointelegraph and some other publications, Forbes sometimes as well, and some tax publications. But people can go to, can email me, wood@woodllp.com. My website address is woodllp.com. And my phone number is there as well, which is my direct line is 415-834-0113. And I'm one of those dinosaurs. I still answer my own phone. So don't call me in the middle of the night, please.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time and really appreciate all your thoughts and guidance around this still evolving topic of crypto taxation. Have a great rest of your day.
My pleasure. Thanks, everybody. Take care.